This time on the Popular Parallax. A black and white Christmas with a chance of Technicolor. Hi there, and welcome to the Popular Parallax. I'm Jerrica Lala, and with me, he'll come down your chimney for a price. Captain Nancy. Nance?
That price is two Oreos and like half a glass of milk. I'm a real cheap date.
I like the mint Oreos.
I like the birthday cake Oreos.
I like the vanilla Oreos.
I like the Oreos that are like covered. They've got the icing all around them.
I like the double stuff Oreos.
I
have an eating disorder.
I like binge eating while I watch shitty TV at 3 a.m.
I brought Oreos into work like a couple weeks ago, and I accidentally got double stuff, which I'd never had because I'm an old lady. And now I may have, like, I haven't bought more because I mainlined them.
You've just been,
like I was just like, I'm just going to have, like, 2 to 8, like, right now, like, a sleeve full.
Yeah, just a casual sleeve full.
It's just icing. It's just icing with, like, a biscuit on it. How does he fit down those chimneys when he's eating double stuffed Oreos all night?
It's a lot of ab work. It's a lot of core work. You've got to pull it in, and then
Nancy is known for ab work.
I just forgot I have something more important to do. Bye.
Because he was just telling me about a new show where he's not wearing clothes again.
Again.
So this is like your whole career.
It's my hit at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the ingenues, there's the leading men, and then there's the abs.
What was the horror movie I watched you in? The short about
I'm not
the...
sure I want to...
You don't want to go into that?
It's very Googleable. It's called Fuck Buddies.
I liked it.
It's...
But the... You know the scene I'm talking about.
Yes.
It made me want to vomit.
As I vomited.
Over and over again.
Yep. Oh boy.
This is the kind of talk that really puts me in the Christmas spirit.
Brings us together. And by the way, when I said I'm throwing up, I'm not throwing up vomit, I'm throwing up semen. Fun for the whole family.
It's making me want some milk and cookies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's a project.
You can leave that out for Santa Claus.
That you get involved in, and then halfway through you're like,
what am I doing?
Is this really where I thought my life was going to be? Like when I sat down at 18 and I thought, where do I want to be in 10 years?
How long ago was that?
3 years ago?
Right. Okay.
Still old enough to know better.
Yeah. I mean, for a man, that's like being 7. That's the decision level that's happening.
Christmas time.
How was Christmas for little Nancy in Alberta?
My favorite holiday. And has
it
remained
still is
my favorite
yeah,
holiday.
Yeah, it still is.
It's such a magical time, you know, and when you're a kid, it's really about the presents. I mean, it's about the family. And,
yeah.
You know, I live on the opposite side of the country than most of my family, so it really is just getting a chance to see them and reconnect. And
yeah, so becomes wrapped up in a nostalgia
thing.
On the other hand, dairy fat.
Oh, just
animal fat.
Gaining that winter weight, so you're ready to hibernate.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. I
mean,
I get home.
My hair gets thicker. I get fatter.
My nails get stronger.
I just turn into, like, a nice, puffy lady pillow.
And I just roll all the way home to Toronto.
That's right. People say, Jerrica, you have the glow of an obese woman. You look beautiful. And I'm like, thank you. And then by Valentine's Day, I just have the glow of a slightly fat girl. So it's not as magical as that special December time.
It really is the most wonderful, stressful, awful,
insane,
beautiful time of the year.
I mean, think of where I work. My day job involves a production that is Christmas centered and dance. You might be able to come up with what it might be in your head. And it is full on 4 weeks of
just Kwanzaa.
Kwanzaa craziness. Like, dancers want to shoot themselves.
Yeah.
Crew, box office, all kind of wanting to die, but you get through it because that spirit of the season. Mm-hmm. is just carrying you, and you're just like, come on, Xmas Day, and
I used to work in a place that had a Christmas village. Every year, they would set up a Christmas village for
it's
5 weeks.
My worst nightmare.
And it is. It's beautiful when you walk through, like, really late at night, and it's deserted, and all the lights are up, and there's a massive tree, there's carolers, like, it's beautiful. But then there's these peak hours every evening and on weekends where there are 30,000 people trying to cram themselves in this really small sort of neighborhood in the city, and it just becomes chaos. Like, it's Home Alone. It's that
children are all lost.
Oh, and you just got parents screaming their children's names and crying, and we had this woman come into the place I worked, and she was like, I thought my child was gonna die, and I'm scared for the safety of my children. I think that really embodies the spirit of Christmas.
For anybody working with the public or working in retail, it is a lot. And those people can go off Christmas.
It's a mistletoe nightmare.
Yeah, I'm still with it. I think part of the nostalgia for me, the big factor, is actually the films.
The music, and the food. Opus, who was that penguin? It was a cartoon, and they made this Christmas special, and it's a wish for wings that work, and it's so bizarre. It's so absurd. There's a scene where it's like a crisis group for birds who can't fly, and there's this. It's so heartwarming, and it really tapped into this like absurdist sense of humor that I had as a kid that I couldn't. I had no idea where else to find these things, and then I found Monty Python and a lot of British comedy that fulfilled that. But I'd say full movie, Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Okay.
The Boris Karloff. My sister and I watch it every Christmas Eve, the like 20 minute.
I believe that was Bunny's pick as well. So that's interesting because I was just, as you were speaking those words, I was thinking it's interesting how Bunny and I, like, were born the same year. We knew what each other was thinking before. And you were just saying that and I thought, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. What a change from season two. And I mean, it goes the same the other way. But then when you said the Grinch, I felt some modicum of relief. Because otherwise,
I have nothing.
I'm not welcome
here
in the world anymore because I don't get anything. I don't. No, I just don't
I'm
get
afraid
you.
Of change.
I don't. Yeah, I hate everything. No. What was the? Because when you first said Peggy, I thought Pingu.
Oh, God.
But that's not what it is.
The penguin with the horn mouth.
I love those guys.
No, I loathed Pingu.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a whole other discussion.
I'll send it to you. It's on YouTube. You can find it on YouTube. A Wish for Wings That Work.
Great.
It's a real delight.
Wait for that.
Highly recommend it.
We have two pairs of classic Christmas movies that sort of relate to each other.
Mm.
And our first pairing is A Christmas Carol versus
The Holly and the Ivy.
In life, I was your partner. Jacob, man.
Oh. What do you want with me? In that case, can you sit down?
I can.
Well, do it then.
Christmas Carol, the only one, even though I've seen a couple other versions that were actually pretty okay.
The Mickey Mouse one is a lot of fun.
Okay. I just died inside. It's
generational
gap. I did watch the Mickey Mouse one and it was cute, but you see, you know what I don't like? That it was the scare at the end was too overtly hellfire for me. I was like, come on. But anyway, that's my personal take. But the Alistair Sim Scrooge Christmas Carol.
1951.
I've never seen it touched.
No.
Even though I've seen other ones that, again, were okay.
And seen a lot of versions on stage, a live radio play done of it, read the book. He is always what I come back to as the quintessential Scrooge.
He's like the whole film. It's not just him, although he carries it. It's like you open the goddamn book and these people like jumped out to life.
Just pour off the page.
Like Fezziwig. Where do they find these people?
Yeah.
They just look, they look like a drawing of the that was done for the magazine for the period. And I mean, that's what they're going for. Mm-hmm. What's impressive is it's not high budget.
Oh.
What so? I mean, it's very cheap. It's black and white, which does help because it sort of classes up some of the, you can tell some of the material's a little shoddy. Some of the, you know, they had to cut a few corners. It's very stage bound. But the performances are incredible. It's all these sort of legendary character actors.
Yeah.
George Cole, who's the gentleman who plays young Scrooge. This is a weird story. He got cast in a movie with Alistair Sim when he was 15. Alistair Sim just took a liking to him. I'll put in, seems to me like a completely innocent, non-creepy liking.
Right.
Sort of took him and his adopted mother in, like had them like live with him and stuff. And like train the guy to like lose his Cockney accent. Helped it. And I mean, he does look like him. Yeah, like you see, he's perfect young Scrooge.
Yeah.
He sounds like him. He looks like him. No wonder, because he was completely groomed by him.
Was mentored by
to be Alistair an Sim. Actor. Yeah. And he lived with him till he was 27 years old. But he's very interesting. Everybody in it is pretty good. Even I mean, the woman playing Fan, the sister.
Yeah.
She, as I looked at her, because I don't really recognize her. I don't see her. And I mean, you don't recognize tons of people in this.
No.
She sort of just went to like a finishing school. You know, she's so-so. She's been in a few movies, but she's so effective in this.
Yeah.
And that's also just a director that knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you can get somebody who's kind of inexperienced and go, no, you're perfect for this. It's small, but it's important.
Yeah. And are able to make it play. You can tell the director here just really knew how to communicate with his actors, because they all just bring
it. Yeah, the kids are good. Like, the Cratchit kids are good. The Cratchits are wonderful.
The hand of the Ghost of Christmas Future is doing incredible work. Yeah. I think went to Yale School of Drama.
Talk about cheap. It's a guy with a black sheet over him, and it's spooky, right?
Terrified me as a kid.
Yeah.
Terrified me. And I guess the image that I had in my head of it was scarier when I went back to rewatch it. I was like, oh, it's just...
It's a man with a sheet. It's
so effective.
Yeah.
It's so effective. And I think it's because it's black and white. He really blends into the background a lot, and sometimes you can only see the hand or just little, like, the shadow of what this ghost is. Yeah. Then it goes back to Alistair Sim, who just sells this terror.
Well, yeah, exactly. You
bulging
react the
eyes.
Way he reacts.
Yeah.
And he manages to do this sort of the stuff at the end where he has to be sort of born again as like a good guy. Talk about challenging. Like, it's ridiculous. And he fucking goes for it. And you believe it. You just go along with him. You're like, okay.
Because you see other actors who are playing.
This is a problem in a lot of adaptations of Christmas Carol. Yeah. It's where it goes stupid is where he cheers up at the end. And I
what day is it?
Yeah. It is. It's very difficult. It is a fairy tale. And they are trying to make it like a real thing. That's the only time I've ever really seen it.
And you
really fly.
Just feel his joy pulse out of the TV screen, and it just fills you. Like, he ages in reverse about 20 years.
Yeah.
He just bounds around, and it's so infectious. And it's a real testament to his ability to track this character throughout this movie. I wonder how long they shot for.
Probably not long.
Yeah, like, it seems like it must have been real quick.
One of the things that this adaptation does successfully, and it is partially just Alistair Sim, is that it's one of the only films that really makes you see that actually he is a good guy.
Yeah.
Because most of these films start out and you just think this guy is a complete son of a bitch, and that's what makes it even harder. When he does do the turnaround at the end, it seems insincere. Mm. Like, you know. And with this, you feel terrible for him, because it's interesting. A lot of the films I've seen actually cut that sister thing.
Yeah.
And that is really important. You see, his sister dies. It's horrifying. And that's when you learn that their dad never likes him. And you see more of a progression from a really nice person to this like cold-hearted thing, that it's for protection because he's such a damaged human being.
Yeah.
And I never get that in any other adaptation. It's something you have to glean from the book. It's not really there. It's a short story, right? So it's partially the screenplay is very thoughtful, but it's also him and the guy playing the younger him.
Yeah.
Really well done. And I think that helps the transition as well, is that you feel like he's getting another chance
turn
to be this good person. Mm-hmm. Like, when he, and then at the end, when he goes, I always cry when he goes to the nephew's house at the end. It's so good.
It's
Even though the woman with no lines playing the maid is good, that scene.
When I think of it, it's that graveyard scene that's like the first thing I
always
think
of, the servants going to sell off his stuff.
Oh,
you've
yeah.
got character actors from heaven. Like, unreal. I think some of it's just improvised.
Oh,
it's insane.
I bet. Yeah.
It's so
just
good.
Just making a meal of this.
Yeah, it's so yeah. good.
I don't
but
know.
He was a character actor who sort of always was that guy.
The...
Yeah, yeah, he's a little yeah. fruity, and he's a,
sissy,
but he's the, but he's yeah. fantastic. Like the stuff where he goes in to see Marley and Marley dies right there with him, and the maid says, "Just like you said," he says, "I always know." Who's that? The doctor? No, sir, the Undertaker. He's waiting. Just sitting there waiting because they're all so poor. It's horrifying.
It is, yeah.
And they do manage to, I mean, when they go to sell that stuff and you got all the little kids in there like coughing, and but they're all working. So they do definitely paint a picture, even though it is low budget. You get that disgusting Victorian London, like poorest of the poor.
Yeah.
Les yeah. Mis feeling for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
Holly, I didn't know it had a smell.
Yes, in the stalks when you break it. You know, it's in the carol, bitter as any gall.
Mary bore sweet Jesus Christ for to redeem us all. Why don't you tell the truth?
That's a whole trouble.
You can't be told the truth!
The other film that we're talking about in this mini-segment is The Holly and the Ivy, which I hadn't heard of until Jerrica introduced me to.
Yeah, I tried to push it in last year's special, too. Because I feel like nobody knows what it is.
No, I hadn't.
It's so good.
It's great. 1952... Yeah. It's a black and white family drama
yeah.
surrounding this one family who reconnects at Christmas. A lot of the members had been estranged. I will say, the beginning of this movie, I thought I was in for something completely different than what it was. Because it's an adaptation of a play.
Yes.
And they just
which
kind
is
of
obvious.
Throw all of these characters at you. Just yeah. a sea of white people that you can't really like discern one from the other. And then the story starts. It's just kind of this onslaught of people that, I don't know, okay, Blanche DuBois when she's grown up. And she's like, where will I go for Christmas? And she's just unloading her problems on all these poor people who want nothing to do with her. She's really a burden for
oh.
everyone she comes
it's
in contact
so sad.
With. It is. But the actor is so good yeah. that she just...
The aunties steal the whole thing.
Yes.
I mean, they try. They don't have that much to do. Like Scrooge, it's British,
mm-hmm.
it's low budge,
mm-hmm.
it's very stagey, and these actors mean fucking business. Like,
yeah.
that's what makes these movies great. It has nothing to do with how spectacular it is, because it's not. It's a very simple set.
Yeah.
Very regular costumes.
Yeah.
Didn't cost very much.
Takes a place over the course of like a day and a half.
And it is so obviously a stage play.
So there's the patriarch of the family. He's a parson, which is
yeah,
a minister.
Minister.
And his wife has recently died.
Yes.
So it's his sister-in-law and then his three children. And
are the two aunties sisters? Is that what's happening? No,
I didn't
they're
get
not.
That vibe.
They're not.
No,
it's
no, because they were surprised to see each other at the train station.
That's
like,
right.
oh, you're going
oh,
to have a Christmas
yes.
too.
Oh,
I'll join
Bridget.
You. I'll travel with you. And Bridget's like, no thanks. And she's like, oh no, it's no trouble at all.
These two are ham and cheese,
yeah.
right?
Then,
which is great because the movie isn't hilarious. It's actually quite serious.
Oh yeah, no.
So
no.
these two are the comic relief.
Yeah.
And Denholm a little bit. My
yes.
elderly
yes.
boyfriend, Denholm Elliott, is in this as a very young man, which is so heartwarming to see that for me. You would know him as Marcus Brody from the Indiana Jones movies. I think definitely 1 and 3. 2 is a little bit weirder, and I don't think he's in that one, the
okay.
Temple of Doom. But he's a delight in those. He's also in several Merchant Ivory picks, if anybody's up into those. He pops in and out of those as well. So there you never know where old Denholm's gonna pop up. But here he is. He's probably about 20.
He's
really, really young.
Yeah.
And he's real good.
Yeah, he plays the son.
And has a bit of his goofy comic relief that he does right up to being like a 90-year-old man.
Yep. Doesn't quite.
But it is more serious. Because
yeah.
he is an angry character as well.
Yeah,
all
it doesn't
the kids
quite make
are a little
sense.
Angry. Yeah.
It doesn't quite make sense in the beginning. I find he's in the army and he is asking for leave to go home for Christmas for 2 days, which he is denied.
Yeah, because he's a bad boy. He keeps going out with ladies and bad boys.
But then he goes home anyway. That was never really explained. But the whole army scene was a bit like,
tacked on.
What kind of fucking army is this? Like, god damn. Everyone, it was very much like, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And 1952, like, you know, you just came out of a really shitty time.
Remember how great the war was? Yeah, oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, they're just far enough away from it.
So he ends up coming back to this manor.
Parsonage.
The parsonage, is that what it's called?
Yeah, whatever. What's attached to the... It is called the parsonage, but it's like the it's an M word.
I went to Catholic school
say the
for
manse.
Too long, and I can't remember.
Whatever is it's the house the minister lives in that used to be attached to the church, but now they don't do it anymore.
We're not doing a religious podcast, all right?
No, we're
if you
not.
Want to learn, why don't you tell us? You
delight.
Tell us.
It is manse.
Is it?
You know how I remember that? Anne of Green Gables. Thanks, Anne. Oh. You drunk bitch. But even though it is about a minister and his family, it's quite non-religious. And not traditional, for especially for the year it was made. And that's what one of the things I like about it so much.
Yeah, it's his daughter Jenny. This one's name is Michael.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter Jenny, who kind of lives at home.
She takes care of the dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like the replacement mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's taking care of him. And then there's the second daughter, the third child, who's Margaret, who's a fashion editor in London. And everyone keeps saying, oh, London's no good for her. She needs to get back and she needs to pay her due. And Jenny can't be sticking around here forever. She's grown. She's an old maid. And her brother at one point literally says, you're 36. That's almost middle-aged. And I vomited all over myself because I'm closer to 36 than I want.
Middle-aged. I mean, I feel I'm beyond middle-aged.
I guess
I'm gonna
that's optimistic
soon.
Of me. Well, I'll miss you. Thank you for...
Bye.
It's so dark. So everyone... Margaret never comes home. She hasn't been home in years. No one really talks to her anymore. And Richard, who is... I'm not sure how he's related to the family either, but he sends word that Margaret's not coming home. And then who shows up? It's Margaret. She comes home. Once all the characters are in the same house, then that's really when the plot gets going. The character work here is fantastic, and you just see this family kind of unravel, and all these things that aren't said become the focal point of the plot.
It's like Long Day's Journey into Christmas.
Absolutely. Yes, it is. Without
morphine
addiction.
It does still have a nice... Like, I mean, you get a pretty feel-good ending out of it.
You really do.
It's not as heavyweight as maybe we're making it sound, but it's just refreshing that it talks about some real stuff.
Yeah.
Which most movies of the era would completely skip.
Would not. They talk about religion in a very objective way.
Yeah.
And I like, the ending isn't that everyone comes around to Christ and that's...
No,
the meaning of
no.
Christmas. And it doesn't feel like a Christmas movie. It's decidedly not a Christmas movie. It's a movie set during Christmas.
Yeah.
Which I really like. And the writing in it is just fantastic. Playwright, based on the play by Winyard Brown, there are just these incredible conversations that happen between family members. And I think that's why it makes, for me, such a good Christmas movie, is it's about family and it's about... You know, these understandings that are achieved during this really stressful time where you're just all shoved into the same place and you have no choice but to...
Talk it out.
Exactly.
I think what I like, too, is that even it is this holiday movie, but unlike many, God knows, I don't think there ever could be a count on how many Christmas movies there are.
No.
Especially, like, but I mean, 90 to 95% of them are shit.
Just garbage.
They're garbage-o.
Yeah.
So these really stand out. And what I like is it doesn't avoid the Christmas thing, but what it really is talking about is investigating and repairing relationships in your life rather than repairing a relationship with an abstract holiday and an abstract God.
Yeah.
Because that's what a lot of them are really about. Mm-hmm. And saying that like making Christmas okay is going to make you okay.
Yeah.
And
you find the meaning of Christmas and you'll find
the
meaning of yourself.
And that's
life.
What I really like about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's real people dealing with real things. And comparatively to some other movies that we'll talk about later in the same time period, you know, it really doesn't shy away from, you know, especially.
Yeah, it looks more old fashioned,
yeah.
but it feels. 30 years later.
Contemporary. Yeah, like, it, absolutely. Not very, but...
For it's out there for at that time. Like, I mean, and you were... I didn't know this, that it actually did get...
It got censored in the United States because people openly expressed that they didn't believe in God.
Yes,
and
there's
other...
a doubt in God. And, yeah. And there's some other, like, out-of-wedlock activity.
Yes.
Happening.
Both the daughters...
Yeah.
Essentially engage in extramarital affairs or, you know, premarital affairs.
Yes.
And it doesn't, it places no judgment on them for it. It's about how they then navigate that, those obstacles. And it's not about the father coming in and preaching at them and throwing the Bible at them. It's them overcoming their fear of their father as a religious figure and, you know, him understanding them.
As people, love not just the, as children. Like, the portrayal of the baby brother is so open-minded for the time as well. Because for a lot of Hollywood movies, I feel like any man would be throwing judgment, whether he was a young, like, little asshole like this one, or the older dad. And in this, he's actually completely on the side of the sisters.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting to me. Like, there was no, like, well, did you think about this? Did you think about that? Like, he completely knows what's going on.
Coming in and mansplaining everything to them.
Not even that. Well, just, I don't know if it's put siblingship before gender roles.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it, like, because I feel like he offers the support that a brother or sister should have, but you just don't see that part. And I'm, like, again, I think it's quite human. I think that is probably how a lot of siblings would react, but we wouldn't see that reflected in that entertainment of that time, you know?
The agency that all the female characters have, and again, in stark contrast with one of the movies we'll talk about later, is beautiful. Like, yes. it really is. It's
well, they're
just...
all very intelligent people.
Yep. Yep.
Which, you know, helps you to sympathize a bit more with the dad, because as much as you might disagree with some of his stuff, he made these kids along with whoever, you know, you wish you could meet who the mom was.
You really do.
Because the kids are all sort of, they have problems. Yeah. They all have real problems, but they're very intelligent individual people.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's the actors. The actors are bang up.
Everyone.
You're dealing with just character actors just doing their thing.
Mm-hmm. And there are moments when it does feel, as often happens, that, oh, this is a play that's been adapted for a movie.
Yes, yes.
When any monologuing happen. Or again, in the beginning and end, there are these series of vignettes that you can tell would have been staged simultaneously or as a bit of a montage or something that don't quite work as well
as
maybe they could. Yeah. But once you get past, I'd say, the first 5 minutes, it just... sales. So if you're looking for a real heartfelt emotional drama to take in over the holidays,
you know, it's a nice alternative to the, you know, like Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah, it's not cloying.
It's a Wonderful Life. Nothing again. Hey, I like those movies, but we see them every year. Nonstop. Yeah. NBC is going to play that thing Christmas Eve. So if you want to, you feel like watching something alternative, that's what I would recommend.
The Holly and the Ivy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Either of these, really, because they do show the Alistair Sim one, but I mean, with the commercials. Just watch it on your own.
Just watch it. Just
buy a copy for like $9.
You can probably rent it on iTunes.
You can probably get it on iTunes. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
So if we have these two movies versus each other, what's the winner?
The Holly and the Ivy.
Holly and the Ivy.
Yeah.
It's a tight one for me.
Is it?
Yeah. It's going to be a tight finish.
I think it's because I grew up watching the Alistair Sim, and it's just a nice change, you know. And at Christmas time, it is a lot about tradition, nostalgia. You know, you do the same thing every year. And so this is something new and something that was just a really good movie.
It's a hidden gem.
It really is.
I still have to go with Scrooge, A Christmas Carol, because it's got everything, but it's very difficult to compare and pick a winner, because I do also love Holly and the Ivy.
So if you decide to partake in either of these movies, let us know what you think. We'd love to hear. And what's your favorite hidden gem?
May your days be merry and bright. Be wise.
So our second pairing, two movies that are different and yet the same.
Basically, a remake of
feel-good Hollywood smash musical.
Call it that. We will absolutely call it that.
Holiday Inn versus White Christmas. You've got Bing Crosby.
Rosemary Clooney.
Rosemary Clooney, only in White Christmas.
Oh, we're going with Holiday Inn first. I'm sorry.
Well, we have black and white versus Technicolor.
Right.
And Holiday Inn was earlier.
1942.
In the midst of America joining the war.
Yes.
Which is one of the reasons that once the song caught on, it really caught on. Because it's not just talking about a white Christmas. It's very reminiscent before the Troubles. Mm-hmm. And it is a wonderful song as well.
Fun fact, during the filming, the Pearl Harbor attack occurred.
Yes.
And that's why they
added...
About
3 weeks later.
That big Freedom July 4th number in the middle of it.
Both movies have a real, like, America is awesome thing as well.
Yes. So then you've got White Christmas, 1954.
Yes. And that's Rosemary Clooney, Danny Kaye, and Vera Ellen with Bing. They are great. I mean, to me, the highlight for co-star, because you got Bing in both. Your highlight co-star in White Christmas is Rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
Your highlight co-star in Holiday Inn is Fred Astaire.
Is it?
To me, it is, because I could watch him with anybody, anytime, for any reason. I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. I can see Nance has some difficulty with that, which I can't imagine. But Danny Kaye was not the first choice.
Third choice, actually.
Third choice, because they did actually want Astaire, which would have made it straight up
a
the
remake.
Same movie.
Yeah.
But he was not available for whatever. He had another commitment.
Retired at that point. He had unofficially retired.
Yeah.
And then he later came out of retirement.
He came back, yeah. Can't stop dancing.
No.
Yeah.
And then it was Donald O'Connor, I believe, who was then injured.
Yes.
And then, like, days before filming started, they hired Danny Kaye.
Donald O'Connor would have been, like, six and one half dozen of the other. Like, he's almost the same. He's a little cuter.
Yeah.
Both... probably queer. We can't say that for sure about our star, because it was never officially out, but we're pretty sure.
We don't want
to... Yeah. Actually, probably had an affair with Olivier, which is pretty interesting.
Aww,
It's interesting. Well, Olivier's family was not very happy about that coming out.
Most
in
people
this day
prior
and age,
to
interestingly.
The
well, this wasn't even,
aunts
this
were
wasn't,
not
this wasn't
thrilled.
That long ago. This wasn't that long ago. They just didn't want it to come out.
No.
But they say it's not true. So who knows? Who knows?
True.
Because he was married, but most actors were married.
Yes.
Right? So that's not really a great way to gauge it. But that's also not the point. But him, Donald O'Connor, who was gay, he would have been great as well. I think any of the three would have been real good.
Yep. Yeah.
But it works.
Danny Kaye just happens to be the one who nails it. I think he's
really
great
it.
In this part.
Yeah, he got it.
Yeah. So...
he's like the gay wingman.
Yeah.
Like your gay bro who helps set you up with Rosemary Clooney.
Yeah. And then
I want that.
Oh, Rosemary.
Yeah.
Honey.
Honey.
Sweetie. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just
a voice like
perfection.
Heaven.
Perfection.
Her and Bing singing together is like some kind of hypnotic sleepy time sound.
It's everything I want in an oratory, like, orgasmic experience.
Yeah. It's like the best you'll ever hear white people sing.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to go with it. Like, it's just like, because it is that it's a style, but they are the top of the game, both of them.
And especially at a time when a lot of particularly female singers were high sopranos and you could barely
she's real mellow.
Tell what the fuck they were saying, because it was all just in their head voice and sounded
just
like screeching a lot of the time.
Well, that's why Judy stood out as well.
Exactly. Yeah. You've got these beautiful, just natural sort
like
of alto chest voices that.
Yeah. And Rosemary also did sing a lot of jazz.
Yeah.
Like
Bing. Yeah. Well,
they were actually quite similar.
I knew Rosemary as a singer before I knew that she was an actor as well, because she's incredible. Like just take a listen to some of her jazz standards and they're beautiful.
I think a big part of the reason she did this film was she wanted to meet Irving Berlin.
That and Bing Crosby. She wanted to
and
be in
Bing
a movie
Crosby,
with Bing Crosby.
Yes,
yeah. That's what she said.
Who doesn't?
Oh, I mean, let's start with Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
It's the first
of
the
black
two.
Black and white, little more basic.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, again, in comparison to the two movies earlier we were talking about, like The Money, there's no comparison. The glamour, there's no comparison. And then they just ramp that up more for White Christmas. For White Christmas.
Yeah, because it was a huge, like, commercial success, Holiday Inn, did really well. And they thought, well, Bing and Fred, a great pair. Yeah. Let's bring them back, do it again. There are a lot of problems with Holiday Inn. There's a lot of problems with Holiday
Inn.
Yeah,
I mean, it has very little structure. The whole structure of it is just doing a number for every holiday
essentially
in the year.
Irving
and
Berlin,
so they pick, I mean, it's this guy's running an inn. He has an act in New York, right? And then he's like, I'm going to retire to a farm. And he gets his heart broken by these shady dames. These dames that can't, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
your problems are different than my problems. Honestly. But I mean, this is the stuff that runs through a lot of this stuff too. But he moves to a farm.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to give up show business and be a farmer.
Yeah, but
no,
of course,
like,
nobody in show business can give up show business for one fucking second. It's like, it's the worst heroin you can...
To be a farmer, that's insulting to every farmer everywhere.
Yeah, well, Bing, I don't know, with his pipe and his big, great chalele, I think he could
saw the montage where he's fucking useless.
I know.
He falls off everything and
but
he doesn't know.
But what's funny is I don't even believe that Bing Crosby himself would be that useless. Like, I can see him on a farm.
I mean, he could do anything.
He'd be like, hey there, Roger. He'd be talking to the horse. Give a horse a name like Roger.
I also wonder
about sugar crisp cereal.
Who in their right mind would sell off a full farm with animals
and food supplied to
a fucking actor who comes up from New York? Is like, yeah. See, I want this farm. Yeah, I'm gonna run it. I'm gonna own it, the Three Stooges on the blower.
I'm gonna call them immediately.
And they're like, oh, this seems like a really good idea. Yeah, I'm gonna put the livelihood of all these animals in your hands. You seem perfectly capable.
He's not gonna put them in a circus or anything. That'd be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so he decides he's gonna run an inn.
Mm-hmm.
That just is open on the holidays, which is not a great business plan.
Mm-mm.
But because this is a Paramount picture, of course, that's what they go with. And that's really basically kind of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it ends with Christmas, right?
Yeah, it starts
on
Christmas Eve.
It goes through the whole year.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the holidays are bullshit, too.
Oh,
I'm like, what
the? Oh, my God.
Like,
is George Washington's birthday that big of a deal?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
They just find any... I mean, and that's... actually what an inn like that would do. They'd find any excuse to be open. So I get that.
Yeah.
But then the numbers they put on are like, I'm like, where are these costumes going from?
It is not Irving's best work.
Like the George Washington holiday costumes are all these like Regency friggin' wigs and dress. Like, I'm just like, where? How?
With a chorus of like 30 people. Where did they come from? Where did they get the... It makes no goddamn sense. And it's not supposed to.
No, that's I think, what we can't overlook. You can't try to make it like real life. And it was never supposed to be.
Absolutely not.
It's a fluffy piece of entertainment.
Yeah, Irving Berlin wanted to make a musical about American holidays.
Yeah.
Here's what happened.
It's an excuse for these people to sing these songs and for people to be entertained and distracted from the war.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
One thing that I can't abide is...
Here we go.
The lack of any autonomy that the women have in this movie. They are
they're just
passed
like
between Fred
really
and
gross.
Bing. And back to Fred and back to Bing. And they're like, oh, he stole my girl, so I'm going to steal his next girl. And it's just
dames,
like,
Nancy, dames.
And these poor women. Marjorie Reynolds is trying to do anything with this role. And
she's
barely charming.
A thread of dignity.
Yeah, at all. At all. And she's just being... tossed around, and she's good. She doesn't sing in the movie. Her voice is dubbed.
Yeah.
But the first time her and Bing Crosby sing White Christmas, it really is a beautiful moment.
Sure.
It's lovely.
It's a great
duet
song.
It's a great song. It won
song.
An Academy Award for this movie. Like
it
is a Christmas classic for that reason. And it went on to be sung by Bing in two other movies.
That's right.
So that is a really nice moment. But... again, you've just got this woman at the beginning who ruins Bing Crosby's life and leaves him for Fred Astaire.
Dames.
And then she leaves Fred Astaire for a Texas millionaire.
That's right.
Leaves the Texas millionaire.
You can't trust women.
To go back to Fred Astaire.
Yeah, they're bad people.
It's just, it's
a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's almost like trying to add some kind of thread of storyline, but it's a little annoying.
It's very...
And unfortunately, because of that, like, to me, the women actually generally just come off annoying to me.
Because
it's not the actors.
People.
It's just the way they're written.
They're not...
They're pests.
Yeah.
And they're... they're put off as kind of dumb.
Yep.
Super promiscuous. And not that they go into sex, and of course. But I don't like this. I feel like there was always this thing, like, it's women who are promiscuous, and it's women you can't trust, when actually it's the fucking opposite. It's true. Sorry, guys. Like, a person is a person, and everybody has their own personality, but it's the way these things were written to come off. Like, that's the underlying tone you get.
These women are just pawns that are used.
Can't trust a dame, and then they just trade them back and forth like they're baseball cards. Yeah. And it's heavy.
And then it's written that the women just go along with it, and it's, sure. Fucking.
Well, I mean, it's Bing or Fred. I'd go along with it.
Yes.
Just pick one. I'm the bigger girl, so I would get Bing. That's what happened in all the Road 2 movies. The slightly slimmer girl goes with the slightly slimmer gentleman. And not that Bing was big, but Fred Astaire is like a wisp.
Danny Kaye is tiny.
He always got like
tiny,
a younger, slightly prettier girl.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'd end up with Bing, which is great. Just hope he doesn't slap our kids around. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
Come on, Nancy. That's not appropriate. That's not a good joke. Now, but you don't enjoy Fred in the movie.
I thought he was so goddamn creepy.
Well, he is a little creepy.
Oh,
he's a bit of a creepy little dude.
They're both creeps. They're real predatory creeps in this movie, and Fred's acting in the first scene. I was like, be a normal human. Just can you try? Just say the words. Don't shoot the words at your fucking co-star. Like it's just there's no active.
Yeah.
Anything happening.
Fred,
it's just
Fred has done movies where he's incredibly chill. Like the movies that they wrote to revolve around him.
His dancing.
Some of like Gay Divorcee is my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of those Fred and Ginger movies, like he comes off great, she comes off great. Like
yeah.
But yes, he is a bit of an awkward sidekick. I don't know if it's just him or if it's the writing's really awkward as well. And he doesn't, I feel like he's just sort of, because he is mainly a dancer and a vaudeville performer, I feel like he's left out to dry a little bit directing wise. Like
possibly
because the dialogue is awkward and maybe he's a little uncomfortable. Maybe they were a little uncomfortable with the content, you know, I mean, some of these guys were like nice married guys and you read a script like this and you're like, oh, this is kind of gross. Well, I guess I have to do it real big. You know, like,
right.
Who knows what was going through their
minds. Just didn't know what to do with it. So just did everything.
Didn't know what to do. Yeah. Didn't know what to do.
Then you do, he's not,
What's
his acting
scene
in this
he does
not
where he's
great.
Sort of drunk and falling around while he did.
Not sort of drunk, where he's obliterated on New Year's Eve.
I love that scene. Like that, not the scene, the dance.
The dance is great.
Because she has to like hold him up for the whole thing. And I mean, that's him doing that work. Like he's making it look like he's a rag doll.
Oh no, he's hammered at that point. Fred Astaire had two bourbons before the first take, had a subsequent bourbon after every other take.
I still think it's good control.
The one in the film is the seventh take. How many bourbons is that?
And he's, what is he, like 130 pounds or something
right?
like that? Like, yeah, that's great.
But he still, yeah, as you said,
he
holds
is
his
in,
control.
He's
like
in control
he's,
because you can't fake that weird dance and just be like, oh, I was
tap
hammered.
Dancing,
like,
you can't.
I think, too, like, if you're somebody like Astaire, even hammered, his body is going to stay in complete control when he dances because it is his entire muscle memory. And he probably did rehearse it until he could do it in his sleep.
Oh, I'm
or
sure.
Or do it drunk.
And it's at a time when they were drinking during the day was just a thing.
Bing
it was
loved
more
a day
acceptable.
Drink.
Yeah, loved a mid-afternoon martini. Another very impressive scene is the dance that he does during the July 4th Independence Day celebration where he used the firecrackers. That was
insane
because they're real firecrackers.
Yeah,
I read they did the scene 38 times and all the crew members were wearing goggles because it just kept bringing up all this like gunpowder and dust and he is just dancing in the middle of this firecracker explosion.
I have to tell you, like, as a kid, when I took, like, ballet lessons and stuff, he was, like, my idol. Like, it's a scene, I think, in Easter Parade where he's in, like, a toy shop and he does an entire dance with, like, all these, like, foot drums that are, like, on the floor. And it turns into this, like, insane rhythmic, like, it seems inhuman. Because, and it is done in a take. Like, it's not like the camera's jumping around. You can tell it was one take. Unbelievable.
And that's another thing that I want to mention is that in all of the movies that we're talking about on this episode, the long takes where they have to do a full number in one take. Like
sometimes with a lot of extras.
It's bananas.
Yeah, they weren't fucking around.
I would challenge you to find half a dozen actors in Hollywood now who could do that.
Yeah.
Who could sustain.
Well, I also, like, Astaire insisted, he started the thing with the dance where he's like, stop doing a cut-in, do a close-up. You film me from head to foot and whoever he was dancing with. Mm-hmm. You film the whole thing and you film us from head to foot.
Yeah.
Because what's the point otherwise? Like, he knew he wasn't a great actor. He's like, that's what I've worked for, is for you to capture this on film. And it's thrilling. This is the magic of film, is a time machine.
Yeah.
You don't need a time machine. You just watch this. Here they all are, in their glory forever.
Speaking of time machine.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, we're gonna get into... if you know anything about Holiday Inn, if you've seen Holiday Inn, I'm sure you're waiting for us to mention...
Abe Lincoln's birthday.
Abe Lincoln.
It was a great birthday party. What's the problem?
I didn't like this movie. And this is the point where I hated this movie for reasons that will become very clear.
Even my dad, who is the king of the classic movies, like most of my knowledge comes from his encyclopedic knowledge. Mm. He can't watch that scene.
It's
like he has to flip through.
Really quite awful and disturbing.
It's so rough.
Because it's so cavalier and just casual. So there's this like comedy of errors and he has to hide who his female co-star is because of all of the ladies
back
and forth and for anyway.
So how's a good way to hide somebody's face?
Would it be blackface?
That's a good idea.
Is blackface a good idea? That's that a logical,
keep us
real
in
PC?
The good history books. Absolutely. Forever. Yeah. It's not going to be out even in like 10 years from now. We should just do it.
No, this is something that's going to sustain, that history will appreciate. That is art, really. I mean,
sure.
It's art.
Yeah.
So he...
Hey, we're celebrating Abe Lincoln's birthday.
Bing decides...
We like it.
...to change the whole number and use the minstrel act. And
it's
picks
Al
up
Jolson heaven.
It picks up a tub of
like grease
shoe
paint.
Polish.
Yeah.
Could have just gone to the bottom of his oven, scraped some shit off the side, added some butter to it, and starts painting poor Marjorie Reynolds' face.
Yeah.
And
it's her best look.
While he's doing it, he's talking to her about how much he likes her, and he wants her to stay at the inn, and then he kind of proposes. And she accepts, and she says, well, I guess I'm kind of engaged now. And he's just smearing black make all over her face.
Like,
and it's like...
Everything to do with this scene is awful. Like, it's not just the execution of the scene. It's everything leading up to it. And you know, like, as it starts... You're getting a tight feeling in your stomach as it's rolling up.
Yep. And then the number happens.
And it's worse than you think.
Yep.
It's worse than you think.
Yeah.
There's old Bing up there like, Abraham. And everybody's singing along.
They've got their 30 extras back. They're all in blackface.
Everybody's in blackface. It's rough. And then...
He can't
even say it. The help is in the kitchen. And yes, they are real African Americans. And they are loving it.
They're loving it. They're not allowed on stage. They're not allowed
in
the club.
They're not allowed to be in there.
They can sit in their pantry and listen to it.
Yeah.
And talk about... I'm not even going to quote the lines.
No,
it's so... So
well,
upsetting, but it's
Abe's their favorite
Abe's
guy.
Their fave.
Abe's their fave.
Abe's their fave.
If it wasn't for Abraham, I might still be a slave. I'm like, I get it. Oh my Christ. And it feels like 20 minutes, even though it's not. I think it's like 7 minutes or something, but you feel
like. It's like four lines.
It makes me want to suicide myself.
Yep.
Like, it's
yep.
just.
You just feel for this poor actor who's.
I know.
I'm sure just resenting every day of work she has on this fucking movie because it's really not.
I'd be very interested to know what was going on because the interesting irony is that, like, Bing Crosby was actually quite an equitable person in, like, the people he hired. He refused to, like, play clubs that said, like, no coloreds or, you know what I mean? Like,
okay.
These guys, the actors, these were not bad guys, because when you're in show business, it's just like with like O'Connor, like being queer. The other actors don't give a fuck.
No,
they know it's show business and they don't care. And I think it's like if you have talent, you're in my band, no matter what color or who you're sleeping with. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I don't know if they all sort of have this like private agreement and then they go to work and they go, well, this is what work is. Or if there was a real burning resentment, and I'm not discounting a resentment, if there was one, I'm just very curious as to how they saw it through their eyes. Like, sure. Because even, I feel like even at the time, it's quite offensive. Like, even at that time, like we talked about Disney and Song of the South and how people freaked out, and that was in the 40s.
Like,
so how do they feel about this? This is rough.
Yeah.
You know, it's too late to be doing, like, when I talk about Al Jolson, that's way before this. That's like the 20s and 30s. Yeah. And he's but it's before.
Yeah.
But I really feel like there's this misguided thing, like it's positive.
Yeah. There is one moment that I do quite appreciate. It's later, fucking Bing Crosby's character keeps going like, oh, that's a great number. The minstrel number. We like the minstrel number, right? And then there's one point where
he sounded so much like him. I thought his ghost was in here.
Oh my God, thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been doing some
stand-up. Go ahead, continue.
And Fred Astaire comes over and is talking about the show, and he wants to be a part of the show. And Bing goes, well, I thought the minstrel number was pretty great. And you can tell Fred give this, like, let's stop trying to make the minstrel show happen. Like, yeah, all right.
Yes!
All right, Bing. Like, yeah,
Bing.
Just,
Bing.
Buddy.
Put down the shillelagh.
It's one of my only really favorite moments of Fred Astaire in this movie.
Yeah.
He just goes, calm your tits. Chill out.
Yeah, let's not say we did.
Yeah. So maybe that was their way
wink.
Of like, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It is too bad, but here's my question for you, Nancy.
Okay.
So now in the States especially, the Hallmark Channel and others will run this movie.
Right.
And they will snip that. They will snip the whole thing. Now, is that better? Or is that just crushing down something ugly that they want everybody to just forget about?
No, I don't think I don't think it's better because it's just sanitizing.
I agree. I don't think it's better. One, it does cut a chunk out of the film. Is it important? Not really.
No.
But is the content important to see? I kind of think it is.
Yeah, and that's what I appreciate about Turner Classic Movies. When they air it, it's in full. Unedited.
Well, and it's like if you're uncomfortable with it and you like have a discussion about it, but don't just snip it like it's not there.
That kind of erasure does no one any favors.
Well, that's rewriting history, basically.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like it either. And I mean, I get it. Nobody wants to watch the scene. It's fucking uncomfortable. But I mean, I think it's mostly uncomfortable for white people.
Yeah.
To see you. What
how fucking, gleefully and joyfully
fucking
we were
anuses we were
participating in this kind of
well it's not even gleeful, it's just like it's just a regular fucking thing, it's just like wee, and you're like it's quite shocking. It really is. And I mean we have to say too, this is not the only film that pulls shit like this. Like, I don't want to make it sound like this is the worst classic movie of all time for putting a scene like this in. Because
you go to Birth of a Nation.
Yeah,
is,
well, I talked about, I love the Mickey and Judy movies, and one of those, I believe it's Babes on Broadway, but I'm not sure, has this huge Robert E. Lee number where they're all in blackface, and it's a huge show number.
And then
huge.
Mickey does yellowface in Breakfast at Tiffany's, which
is
even
which
later.
Like years, and that's way later, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
just to say
bad.
that
yeah.
kind of
this is well I mean
censoring.
It's still happening just in a different way. I mean, think of all the talking that's been happening about this whitewashing and stuff like that, but this is just a different version of that.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. It's just the same people in control all the time
of making themselves look better and say, "Oh, well, you know, what that was at the time and we know better now." It's like,
until you make
we
Ghost in the
though.
Shell.
A lot of people don't. Like you look at any current events and no. So
Merry
I don't
Christmas, everybody. I'm going in on this racism thing. I was like, okay.
Do we have
I mean,
to?
I can't deny that it's
to.
Really bad.
It's worth the conversation with grandma who thinks that it's all in good fun. It's worth the fight.
Yeah, you can take from this film what you will. I think it has highlights. I do
it
enjoy
does. Yeah, absolutely.
Sequences of it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I was younger, I kind of did prefer it.
Two-way Christmas.
But I've come around. Yeah. Now I'm sort of going the other way.
Snow, snow,
snow,
snow,
snow.
It won't be long before we'll all be there with snow.
Snow, snow. I want to wash my hands, my face and hair with snow.
White Christmas.
White Christmas is
White
one
Christmas
of my favorite
is
Christmas
Holiday
movies.
Inn on steroids.
Yeah. It took a couple years off, went through Rocky III, had a bit of a change of heart, came back stronger.
It's like a spiritual sequel, but it's not meant to be a sequel, but it's the same movie, amped up.
They use the same
Technicolor.
Set, the literal same kind set. Of, they just No, they did. Yeah, they just like painted it.
Well, that sound stage at the end. Like, I love that stage. What is it? Supposed to be the fucking barn or something? Oh, and it turns into this massive sound stage where you're like, what the hell is
Again,
happening?
Logic and reality do not exist, and you just gotta suspend that. Again, a real fun looking army experience.
Yeah, it looks great, right?
Just
even
sitting around singing with a bunch of guys.
I love how they try to put in sort of a half-assed war scene at the beginning where they're like, oh my god, a bullet! And you're like, that is a cardboard box, but it's fine. Talk about stage bound. That looks like a stage play right there. It looks like something I saw at Drayton. Like, it's like...
Really, yeah.
But there's so many, I mean, aside from the stars, insanely good character actors surrounding them. I'd say more so than in Holiday Inn.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Would definitely agree. But Danny Kaye's charisma and just magnetism in this movie is really, I think, something of the time and that can't be replicated. Him and Bing, when they're doing Sisters, is one of the most delightful things.
I love that. But you know what? I'm not that thrilled about Danny Kaye in this. So that's interesting.
Really?
Yeah. I just don't think he's very good.
As an
actor.
Interesting. Okay.
It's just very, it's what you were saying about Fred, and you're right. It's just very broad. It's very predictable.
Broad strokes, yeah.
Kind of wish it was Donald O'Connor, but hey, it's fine.
It's,
And he completely competently does the job. It is a goofy character.
Yeah.
And he is pretty funny, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of some of the people around him that he maybe doesn't quite reach
shine.
That pinnacle, but he's pretty
well,
good.
When you've got him and Vera Allen, and then opposite that, you've got Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Bing's the superior actor. Rosemary, I think I've mentioned that I'm partially obsessed. I can't remember.
Yeah, I love Rosemary. I fucking love Rosemary. She sounds great. And actually, she puts in a pretty good acting performance as well.
Does she ever?
Yeah, she's very like low-key.
Yeah.
But it works. It comes across.
Because then
I think she's more believable than Vera Allen, to be honest. I mean, Vera is very cute.
Rosemary's the one that grounds
She is a dancer, and she does a great job. She does get dubbed because she can't sing.
Yeah.
But that works. It's an old movie.
It's fine.
Hey, I think they should do that now, but they don't want to do that anymore. They want it to be legit. But I think it works fine.
It does. It absolutely does.
It's, you know, the woman singing gets credit. She gets paid. There's no need to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
It makes it sound better. So they give her a lighter voice, though.
Yes.
And then Rosemary has the deeper lady's voice.
And when she comes in with Love, You Didn't Do Right by Me.
Oh, come on. That black dress. Get lost. They had costumes by Edith Head.
Oh, of course.
The character of all of Hollywood. This little tiny lady who was kind of scary looking and wore big round glasses.
Immortalized in The Incredibles.
Exactly. Yeah. And she did some... Like, it's funny, it was said she enjoyed dressing men more than women, but the women's costumes are insanely good.
Why? Men's costumes are so...
I don't know, I think she probably enjoyed the challenge of a suit.
Oh, okay.
A handmade suit.
Sure, yeah.
But I did know, you do notice that Danny Kaye, like, when he's dancing with Vera Allen, his entire suit is monochromatic, which is, even the shoes are exactly the same gray as the suit, so it's supposed to make them look... longer and more extended, and it does kind of work. Like,
really,
even the socks are exactly the same color, like, everything's the same.
He looks like an ostrich. He's 700 feet tall in that movie.
Yeah, well, and I think it's because Vera Allen is like 5 foot tall too.
Yeah.
But he's huge.
But they are great pairings. Like, Vera Allen and Danny
Kaye,
they really work well together.
And both her and Rosemary, I think, are corseted in for the gods.
Within an inch of their life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because even Rosemary, who's always been a little bit of a bigger gal, looks like she's about a size 6 in it. Like, she looks very small for her.
Yeah. But when you go back to Holiday Inn, Marjorie Reynolds and Bing Crosby are a great pair.
Yeah.
Fred Astaire, Marjorie Reynolds, not. I don't buy it for a second.
I think, too, I think it's maybe one of the most beautiful that Rosemary Clooney's ever looked. It's, and I think a big part of it is those Edith Head costumes. Yeah. Like, that in that Love You Didn't Do Right By Me, that black dress is unbelievable. But even the funnier, like, vaudeville-y costumes, like the sisters' costumes.
The blue dresses and the feathers.
They're good costumes. Yes, and they both are. Look good. Mm-hmm. And that's hard, too. They are different types. So to make them not look weird wearing the same outfit is a bit of a trick. And mm-hmm. it's flattering on both of them. Mm-hmm. It's that 50s, like the big poodly skirt.
A-line, yeah.
Huge feathers. And then, of course, the men come out and do like the reprise. Full-on drag lip sync. Yeah, I knew Nancy would go for that.
It's so funny.
It is very funny. Well, because it's not, if you've never seen the movie, it's the last thing you're expecting.
Yeah. And it's just Danny Kaye, like really going for gold.
He's loving camp. It. He's in heaven.
Sleep Away.
Yeah, he's in heaven. Bing's just like,
just
this
laughing
is,
at
Bing's
him.
Like, this is fine, I'll do it. And Kay is like, this is the best I've ever felt.
Yes.
I feel real.
Yes,
I feel like myself.
All of you to church. I'm bringing all the saints.
Yeah.
And you're living for me.
Yeah. And they're not really in drag, but they sort of change
like
their outfit.
Drag.
Yeah, they have little things
drag.
In their hair, and
yeah.
you see
They've
their
got
little.
The fans,
they have
the
their
feathers.
Like their like sock overall. What do you call those?
Oh,
sock?
Those like sock garters.
Sock garters. Yeah. You see the sock garters, which yeah. I thought was real funny too. Yeah.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman...
The songs are really good. Like that snow song they sing on the train.
Yeah.
It's so charming. Yeah. And they can sing, except for Vera. But the lady who's singing for her can sing just fine. So they sound great.
Yeah, Irving really dropped the ball, I find, with Holiday Inn. Because I like a lot of
Irving
Berlin songs.
It's funny, because one of the songs from that was a big hit, that Be Careful, It's My Heart. And the song's kind of not that great.
No, it's not.
I mean, Bing sings it, so you're like, oh, that sounds nice. But then you listen to it, you're like, there's not much to this.
No.
Like,
there
is not much to this.
The Happy Holidays song, which is... so boring, and you could tell that it's supposed to be like the title card
song.
Like, Happy holidays, happy holidays. That's actually how it goes. I'm pitch fucking perfect. But then with White Christmas, he really brings it home. Like, their vaudeville acts are so great, and in Holiday Inn, that's some of the better numbers are their vaudeville acts and their dances
yeah,
that they do together.
Totally.
White Christmas,
yeah,
even better, and you've got. Just, I think, an all-around better cast. And
well,
then you've
got Michael Curtiz as the director.
Who?
So, Mildred Pierce.
Casablanca.
So, this guy
Robin
knows
Hood.
What he's doing, right?
Yeah.
He knows
yeah.
what he's doing.
Yeah.
God, I love Robin Hood. We'll get into that another
Flynn.
Time. Errol.
The
Errol,
best alcoholic there ever was.
You're so handsome. Stop drinking so much.
Please stop injecting your oranges with vodka. He's
but
amazing.
Yeah, his director knows what he's doing.
Yes, and also you've got Bob Fosse as the uncredited
yes.
choreographer. So,
yeah.
And another later Bob Fosse tie-in, you've got George Chakiris, who is one of Rosemary Clooney's dancers in Love You Didn't Do Right By Me, who
right.
later goes on to win an Academy Award for playing Bernardo in West Side Story.
There you go.
And I instantly clocked him.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was like, yes, 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 yes. When you're a shark till you... hark.
Yeah.
I'm not an improviser.
Nope. Yeah, and the character people are talking like it's, it's Dean Jagger and Mary Wicks as the hotel, the inn owner.
Yes.
And the weird maid who's mm-hmm. like super annoying, but she, her career, these character people, they're funny looking people and they work till they die.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how they look because they're there to be that character.
Yeah.
She was in Sister Act and then Sister Act 2. Like she worked. Yeah.
Who was she in Sister Act? I mean,
one of the nuns.
Sister Mary,
one of the
whatever.
Old nuns. Yeah. I later career, she was cast as the mother of Shirley MacLaine's character in Postcards from the Edge. She played Sister Mary Lazarus in Sister Act.
Short lady. She's kind
well,
of in everything.
She sort of has a long bird face.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But these are the kind of people, they work forever.
Yeah.
It's fun to see her in this.
You see her in everything.
But And the guy, Dean Jagger, he won an Oscar. Best Supporting Actor in 12 O'Clock High, 1949. These people.
They're surrounded by...
They're very high caliber characters surrounding them.
Yeah.
And I think that amps it a little bit from the previous movie as well.
Yeah.
Is that the supporting cast is better.
That's a good point.
Very enjoyable watch still.
It is. It holds up.
It's colorful too. Like that Technicolor really like punches you in the eyeball and you're like, oh my God.
Well, and with the costume design, it's just this
everything is red
palette.
And blue and green. Like everything's very bright.
Yes. Oh, that there's this one of the later numbers where the dancer sort of descends from the ceiling in front of Bing and she's just wearing this hot pink skirt and it's
the numbers are so over the top. Oh. Like it's just it's like, what is this, an inn? Oh, forget that. Forget it.
We've got
forget
a fly
it.
Tower.
Forget
We've
it.
Got wings.
Forget
We've
it.
We've got the it's
don't
it's
think
the
about
inn.
That. It's like in
everything.
Priscilla, where you're like, wait, how did they get these costumes on the bus? Don't think about it.
It doesn't. No.
Don't think about it.
No.
Don't worry
Again,
about it.
Suspend your disbelief. Just let it happen. Let it wash over you and enjoy yourself.
I wish I was back in the army. So many guys full of VD with longing in their eyes. That's how it goes, right?
I have absolutely no comment.
That song gets ingrained in me. I'm always just like, what? Like, that song is the weirdest song.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
there. They're like, they fed me 3 meals a day. You're like, what is happening? This is so stupid.
Did this warrant a musical number? Who,
they do
who
it,
said
they
yes?
They do it for the Jagger character. The old, you know, because he was their, like, commander or something.
Yeah. And then
and
he's
like,
running
yeah,
an inn
I'm,
back
I'm
in
sure
Vermont.
I'm sure he wants to see this number get friggin' post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, what are you doing? They come marching out in their uniforms and it's very, I mean, you can tell it's like, now it's in the 50s and they're like, remember how awesome we were in the war?
We
remember
nailed
the
that.
War? We nailed
remember when
it.
We won that war?
Yeah, exactly.
Guys.
You're welcome, everybody. You're just
Fuck
like, yep.
Yeah. Let's do it again.
It's just like, but besides that, it's probably my least favorite number because I'm just like, come on.
Yeah.
But having Bing sing where they're supposed to be overseas in the war when he sings White Christmas, that is lovely.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it, even though it's cheap and it's weird.
No,
it
no.
It works.
It really works. It really does work.
The big finale number is like so busy and insane. You kind of like have a coronary a little bit.
It's a bit of an assault.
It is. And it features some of the worst child ballerinas you'll ever see in your life. Like, these kids, they don't know what they're doing. They're endangering their health and safety.
Yes, yes. I'm sure it was them. I'm sure it wasn't the studio heads.
No,
or their
it was
parents.
Them. It was their decision. Yeah, like, actually, the kids totally seem a little out of it. Like, they're drugged. I don't know what they did to them to make them do that, but it's odd.
Yeah.
That was an odd choice.
Yeah.
And there are so many people in this closing number. It's of like a choral White Christmas where Rosemary and Bing like sing it, but then like a million choir people sing it. It's their kids, I guess.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, everybody's wearing red velvet. So it's just like flood of red velvet just coming and like assaulting your vision.
I'm amazed that this inn could just keep expanding, that they could eventually turn it into a hotel, into a high rise.
It's a barn, right? They do this show in the barn.
Oh,
that's what it's supposed
to
be, but it's this huge soundstage.
Yeah.
Like the size of a gymnasium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is incredible the way they just defy the laws of physics. With this
and
inn.
It doesn't like the whole army come in at the end and they're
I
like,
think you're right.
Yeah, it is. It's insane. Like every time you're like, wow, this is a lot. Then like 100 men in uniform can marching up on the stage.
Yeah, every
like,
time you think
oh
you're like,
God.
Okay, that's it. They died. Oh.
They could afford extras, honey, back then.
Honey.
They were like, we need 500 guys. And it was just like, yeah, this is a studio.
Yeah.
So we've got whatever.
Yeah.
You 500 Ken dolls just standing up there. It is. It's wild.
Yeah. All those young men.
They can afford. Well, it's just what they could afford to put into one scene. And again, this scene, like it's a big part of it. It's just this huge framing. It's like long takes. And it's just like, how is everybody under control for this? And then you've got the kids involved.
Well, I wonder the kind of rehearsals that they would have done. If they would have had lengthy rehearsals or if it was
just
6 weeks
of rehearsals for this movie, which is unheard of now.
That's a gift.
Yeah, that's unheard of. Yeah. We're lucky if a play gets 6 weeks over.
Oh.
That's a lot for a play. So for a movie, it's insane.
Wow,
but that means that everybody knew exactly where they were going, what they were doing, who they were looking at, where the camera is, like everything.
Yeah.
I guess that's how they could do such spectacular drawn out things with like 100 people in the frame. I think this is my winner over these two.
White Christmas?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's delightful.
Yeah.
It's so
I went a lot of years not watching it. and just see. And then, like a couple years ago, I popped in, and I'd seen it as, like, quite a few times as a kid. And then I guess I sort of got sick of it. And I always thought, oh, well, Holiday Inn, that's the legit one. Then I watched White Christmas, and I was like, wait, this is really good.
Yeah.
This is really good.
Until university.
I forgot how many songs in it and how many were good.
Yeah. Whereas Holiday Inn has just as many, if not more, numbers. I'm sure they have more.
Yeah, but they're not all good.
Barely two of them are good.
Yeah, yeah. They're just not as memorable.
No, but even the songwriting, anyway.
That's what I mean. Like, they sort of meander as songs and stuff. And these ones, you're like, oh, wow. It's sort of, like, real catchy. It's like a real musical.
Yeah.
Or how a musical should be. And it's what you'd expect of Irving Berlin.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite, White Christmas or Holiday Inn? You let us know. You tell us. Do you like racism?
Now, come on. We have a new segment. It's a segment I like to call, I Didn't Know That, with Jerrica and Nancy. Hey, Nancy.
Hey, Jerrica.
So at the end of White Christmas, that hideous last scene with 100 extras and the Christmas tree and the mentally gone child dancers... They finished.
Lobotomized.
That was a very complex scene to shoot, apparently. Crazy complex. So then, they literally finish. They have lunch. The movie is finished. It's wrapped. The king and queen of Greece come by to visit the set. And the director says, hey, guys, we want to pretend to shoot this scene again. So that they have something wonderful to remember. So you're just gonna go up there, you're gonna redo, and they were like, they get up on stage.
They did it.
They're waiting, oh, and God. Bing goes, I'm not doing this. And Clooney goes, yeah, but we have to, I mean, and he's like, and he literally just walked away from the scene. He's like, I'm gonna play golf.
Oh, fuck yes.
He leaves.
Oh, Bing.
So the whole thing they watch, because their voices are already recorded, because they're lip syncing these numbers, you hear Bing, but where is he? He's on the golf course, baby.
Yes! That, I love that.
Yeah. And also, did you know that?
No.
I'm like your worst mom nightmare.
Did you know? Yeah. No, honey.
Teeth and tits.
Honey,
teeth and tits.
I didn't believe the performance. So if we could just, did you know? I would have done the same thing. Oh, fuck yeah. You finished shooting this movie.
It's because you're a big shot man.
4 months. No, just because I'm.
I don't think Vera or Rosemary would have felt so good about going, I'm not doing this.
Oh, no, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah.
That they.
And I don't think Danny would have felt real good about it either.
No, it's because he was.
But Bing was just like, yo, fuck everybody. I'm going to get some sugar crisps.
Oh, I'm sorry. Me and my Oscar are going to go play golf.
So you end the movie by fake shooting another scene that everybody hated shooting. That's the spirit of Christmas.
That's horrifying.
I thought it was quite charming.
No, it's like getting to the end of the school year and be like, oh, the superintendent's coming by. Can you just like pretend to like take the test against
one
so
more day?
Watch you and do it. Exactly. You don't actually have to do it. You just have to like pretend.
Yeah.
They can just watch the goddamn movie, actually.
Yeah.
And suck my whole dick.
That's nice.
That's me.
That's it. That does coincide with your reputation around town.
I'm not well known.
And that's all for I Didn't Know That with Jerrica and Nancy.
Because I really didn't know that. And I'm the worse for it? I don't know.
Well, I didn't say you'd be the better for it.
Well, dear dozen of you out there.
The Dirty Dozen.
The Dirty Dozen. Thank you for joining us for... This has been 3 episodes of Season 2. I'm so grateful to anyone listening. And if you're out there, I hope you have a very happy holiday and a Merry Christmas.
Have a fabulous Christmas and a drink on us. We'll be back in the new year.
Some surprising, exciting announcements and an episode that's going to make you fucking...
Sick.
I'm already sick thinking about it.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait.
I'm so excited.
I'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
You're worried and you can't sleep. Just count your blessings instead of sheep. And you'll fall asleep. Counting your blessings.
And that That's how we do a black and white Christmas spectacular. Popular Parallax theme by Ken Chamberlain. Happy holidays to all our fabulous listeners. Tune in January 2nd to come firewalk with us. It's just something you didn't know.
Knowledge is power. And power is power. And power bars make me poo myself. Let's cut that.
Oh, God. Yeah, this is this segment, 56 minutes. So I've got a train wreck to clean up. Train wreck.